A housing policy has been shaped by a number of historical episodes that were traumatic. And the first one is the Great Depression. And the Great Depression, I think, differs from the 2008 period in that, you know, in both cases you have feedback loops between sort of housing and housing finance and the economy. But I think in the most recent recession, the effect of the housing crash on finance, on the economy, is very strong, or very evident. There's controversy about everything in economics, so I wouldn't say that everyone agrees that the housing crash was the dominant factor in the economy, but kind of looks that way to a lot of people. Great Depression, I think a lot of the feedback goes the other way, that is, from the economy to housing. I get the sense that the housing boom of the 1920s peaked well before 1929. Some authors put the peak at around 1925 for the peak of the housing boom. Well, that suggests that housing that housing wasn't really a cause of the Great Depression. Another thing is that although housing finance did rise, that is, there was a rise in mortgage debt, rose in the 20s, that banks did not collapse because of housing debt. In fact, there's some causality running the other way. That is, as the banks collapsed, mortgage money dried up. So overall, the picture that I get of the Great Depression is the economy affected the housing market. Again, the arrow going this way. It affected in two ways. One is general deflation, which is, of course, bad for people who are borrowing money. And then sort of a credit crunch due to so many banks failing. And again, they fail because of general deflation. And that credit crunch then makes it harder for borrowers to refinance home loans. Now, why do they have to refinance home loans? Because the typical mortgage was a 5-year balloon, meaning no interest payments. I'm sorry, only interest payments, no payments of principal for the first 5 years, and then after 5 years, it's entirely due in 5 years, which is fine as long as there's enough mortgage money available, but because by the 1933 or so, there were so few banks that were solvent, mortgage money was hard to come by. And in addition, with the general deflation, nominal home prices really collapsed. Now, I'm emphasizing nominal home prices because other prices in the economy also were dropping, and that's another difference between the 30s and today. In 2008, other prices in the economy were pretty stable. It was just a relative collapse of housing prices. In the 1930s, the drop in home prices was part of a general drop in prices, generally in the economy, so a general deflation. So again, I think that there was a lot of impact of the economy on the housing market in the 1930s. I don't think that the case is quite as strong that the housing market decline was what drove the overall economic decline in the Depression. I think it's kind of more the other way around. In any case, people looked at what happened in housing. They were certainly not happy that so many people lost their houses. And so there was a lot of focus on, first of all, the 5-year balloon mortgage, that there was the belief that that was not the best instrument, that other instruments that savings and loans had just started to experiment with, but hadn't become widespread, were better instruments. And of course, we know that the 30-year amortizing loan is now the standard, and that was something that was pushed by policymakers. So in the 30s, we have some agencies created. One was a temporary agency, the Homeowners Loan Corporation. That was basically to buy up bad mortgages, enable borrowers to keep their homes by reducing the principal amount on the mortgages or coming up with some other way of helping out home borrowers. That's generally fondly remembered by people who've studied the policies of that period. It sort of acted like a bad bank, sort of taking over bad mortgage debt and allowing some homeowners to remain in their homes. You create the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, to their goal is to promote this 30-year amortizing mortgage and provide a sort of some federal guarantee of credit so that the more mortgage loans will be issued and so to sort of prop up a housing market that otherwise was falling and that lenders thought was too risky to lend into. And you had Fannie Mae to purchase the FHA-backed loans. So that was kind of a major purpose of Fannie Mae at that time, Federal National Mortgage Association. This was nothing like the Fannie Mae of today, which is buying all sorts of loans, and which, you know, until 2008 was a shareholder-owned firm. This was strictly a government enterprise that was buying the mortgages that the FHA guaranteed. So the policy lessons that were learned from the the other thing is that you get you get deposit insurance, FDIC, and so now you have banks with their deposits insured, so people can have confidence leaving their money in banks again. That was another big policy response. So the policymakers acted as if the problems in the 1930s were concentrated in the 5-year balloon and uninsured deposits. And sort of a lack of mortgage credit. And so to address all these things, they promoted the FHA, FDIC, and so on. And then as we came out of the Second World War, there was a sense that there was a potential for huge increases in housing demand, and an issue of how to meet that. And what emerged from that was the concept of a savings and loan. The savings and loan had been around for a while, but they were given a bunch of regulatory advantages. One of the things that came out of the Great Depression was interest rate ceilings on deposits. So a checking account, you were not allowed to have an interest rate on checking account. So zero on checking accounts. And regulated rates on savings. And what happened was that particularly state chartered savings and loans started paying above regulated rates. So the savings and loans started paying above regulated rates, and they started getting more of the money and more deposits. And policymakers generally were happy with that because the savings and loan was structured with incentives to make mortgage loans. So they got deposits, and they lent them out. They had incentives to lend them out as mortgages, often these 30-year amortizing mortgages, which the policymakers had wanted in the first place. So what you get by the 1950s is a mortgage finance system that's dominated by S&Ls, by savings and loans, where their cost of funds is regulated, and although they chip away at the regulations, they're basically regulated. So the interest rate, because of interest rate ceilings, they're issuing the 30-year fixed rate mortgage is dominating. There are some kind of perennial problems that start to emerge that maybe we'll talk about next time, but just very briefly. The United States is still very much against any kind of national banking, so California is kind of chronically short of funds for mortgages. And when interest rates rise, deposit growth slows rapidly, because people have better things to do with their money than to put them into deposits where the interest rates are regulated. And so you get this very strong housing cycle tied to Fed policy. So whenever the Fed raises rates, you get this, because deposit growth slows, mortgage lending dries up, and you get a sharp housing cycle. So whenever the Fed in the post-war period decides to tighten up on the money supply, the result is a very large impact on housing. It becomes a very housing-dominated cycle. Okay, so that's kind of carrying things a little bit forward. Again, the main thing is that the outcome of the Depression is to create these agencies, particularly FHA, Fannie Mae, and FDIC, and they give us the 30-year amortizing mortgage and deposit insurance to back the firms that are doing mortgage lending.